Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I am joined today from the Cape by Mr. Chris Patterson. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. And you?
I am doing all right, all right. I'm very glad it is Friday. We are also joined today by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you, sir?
I'm in a very cold, rainy Johannesburg. Johannesburg looks like, is increasingly looking like a slum. We've got the world collapsing around us. We've got 30% tariffs. Things aren't going great.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? It's always true that it could be worse, because it could be worse. And maybe that's coming down the pipe. We'll have to... Well, indeed. All right, let's get into the first news story of today. And today, I just wanted to go a little bit into some polling that came out. I think it was yesterday, from the Brenthurst Foundation, who have been doing some polling over the past couple of years. This is their latest survey, comparing results with last year's survey. And the sort of top line numbers are pretty interesting to begin with. They asked party political support. This poll was sort of over the last month or so that they held it. The sort of top line is that if the election were held now, according to the Brenthurst poll, the ANC would actually be slightly up from their previous result at 43%, clawing back some support from MK. The DA would be way up, getting around 27%, and these are numbers modeled for turnout. The EFF would be down, I think, to 8, which is about 2% down from where they are now. And MK would also be a little bit down. So it looks like in these results, the ANC has clawed back some. Interesting results. I wonder how all of the drama of the last couple of weeks is going to affect things going forward. But for me, some of the most interesting data was actually when you kind of dive deeper into these results. They had 100 slides in the polling results. Here's an interesting one, for example. Favorability. So this is, they take the number of people who say they have a favorable opinion of a politician, and then they minus from it the number of people who say they have an unfavorable opinion of a politician. Cyril Ramaphosa was at 6% favorable last year. He's now at -2. However, he remains the most popular politician in the country, even if that is a greatly diminished stature. Second place was, interestingly, John Steenhuisen, who I suspect, it doesn't say here in this polling, had a lot of people not knowing who he was. This is a problem that he's had in polling before. However, he had -7% favorability. Helen Ziller, -12. Peter Kroonewald, -13. A bit of an improvement from last year when he was -18. And the most unpopular politicians in the country, according to this, are Julius Malema and Jacob Zuma. Julius Malema with a -29% favorability rating, and Jacob Zuma with a -40% favorability rating, which is a crazy number. Interestingly, Musi Maimane, who once had pretty high favorable ratings, has gone all the way down to -28. So that's quite a fall from grace for him. Other interesting little tidbits I noticed in the details here. It looks like voters in Johannesburg are the least optimistic. I think 77% of them said that they believe their municipality is going in the wrong direction. Cape Town residents are more optimistic, but still actually in absolute terms, relatively pessimistic about how things are going. Another interesting tidbit, according to this, the DA is polling at around 10% of Black South Africans supporting them, which is, I think, just under double what they got from Black voters last time. That would put them ahead of the EFF in terms of percentage of Black South Africans supporting them, which I think the DA would be very happy about. The Patriotic Alliance seems to be making some inroads here and there. Some other interesting little tidbits. It generally seems across many of these different data sets that the MK voters tend to actually be quite optimistic relative to everyone else about the sort of state of the country, how the GNU is doing, things like that. whereas EFF voters are overwhelmingly negative and hostile. They are the least favorable towards the GNU, which is generally regarded well by most South Africans, around 60% of South Africans. EFF voters seem just generally the most pessimistic in every single answer to every single question. Another very interesting little stat here. They asked, you know, how would you say the following government departments have performed since the May 2024 election? Coming out top, and I'm sure Gayton McKenzie will be very happy for this, 77% say sports, arts, and culture is doing well. 63% say basic education is doing well. 56% say agriculture is doing well. Same with home affairs. 53% communications and digital technologies. So, interestingly, those opposition-controlled ministries are all scoring really high in the public perceptions game. In comparison, the highest-rated ANC ministry is higher education with 49% approval, the presidency with only 46%, and the least popular ministries out there being water and sanitation with -63% of people saying that it's performing poorly, and electricity and energy with 72% of people saying it's performing poorly. Top items that voters care about, according to the survey: infrastructure, decay in their municipalities, and jobs. So, Chris, that's an awful lot I've just been through, but what's your takeaway from these surveys? Anything that stood out to you? Do you kind of think that this is an accurate snapshot of where we are at the moment? What's your take on this?
I do think it is accurate because, I mean, we've gone on with our lives now. The GNU is into its 9th month, I believe, and not much has changed, and it tracks in the polling. I mean, what was I going to say? Yeah. What I find interesting, you mentioned there, the water and sanitation and electricity's favorability ratings are low because the people don't have water and the people don't have electricity. I remember reading, doing some research for the Institute's water paper last year, and Mpumalanga had 90-year-old pipes, and the minister seems to think that throwing more money at the problem is going to solve it. So unless there's a new minister that actually does something to change what's going on in those portfolios, I don't think their favorability ratings are going to improve. But I also think that just because there's new faces, the people are more open to the fact that there might be an opportunity for change. But with the GNU up in the air at the moment due to the budget, that favorability could change.
So this is a very interesting question, actually, is that this survey seems to be at a sort of snapshot in time. As we've had the budget debate and the possible disintegration of the GNU. So, you know, as you say, things may dramatically change in people's attitudes going forward. But Terence, what do you make of this? I mean, was there anything that stood out to you? Interestingly, the kind of consensus amongst South Africans in terms of the most popular options for what they want to see out of a potential coalition government is the most popular option, I believe, is an ANC-DA coalition. And the second most popular option is a multi-party coalition involving the 10 parties currently in the GNU. An ANC-MK coalition and an ANC-EFF coalition are much less popular, it seems. What's your take on all this?
Look, I think that there's an interesting continuity now. Coalition permutations haven't featured in polling going back all that length of time, at least not to my knowledge. But I do recall, I think it was Afrobarometer, and this is going back probably about 15, maybe 20 years, asking about things like the role of opposition. And there was a lot of sympathy for this idea that it's the opposition should help the government govern better. What I'm getting at here is I think a lot of it has to do with a yearning for government that cooperates and that gets things done, and that is not toxically, where the kind of toxic hostilities are mitigated. We see some of that in I think fairly facile commentary about how, you know, coalition partners must put aside petty politics and just do what's for the good of the country, which I think misunderstands the whole principle of democratic politics, but be that as it may. There's a there's a large appetite for that. I also think that the wariness about an MK ANC or EFF ANC hookup reflects the fact that fundamentally South Africans are fairly conservative and moderate in their positioning. And I'm always directed back to a conversation I had briefly back in 1997 with a sort of mature African gentleman who had been part of the 76 generation. And he said to me, the reason why communism didn't take off in South Africa is because fundamentally black people Africans are property owners. He said, you know, even in prior to Roman Dutch law, there was the idea of owning cattle. He says that is very, very deeply ingrained in African culture. I think that goes some way to explaining the orientation that produces, you know, we'd rather have centrist politics. We'd rather, you know, I don't want your house, I want my house sort of thing. The other thing that I find interesting is the perceptions of leaders, and we're all into negative territory, even Saint Cyril Ramaphosa. That is interesting because South Africa has for a long time tried to coast on this charismatic authority. You know, it was Nelson Mandela, you know, in a different way. It was Thabo Mbeki, and then it was Jacob Zuma. Love or hate Jacob Zuma, many people loved him and had a great deal of faith in him. I think that this has now turned toxic because people are frustrated, and I think those leaders that have occupied such a position in our consciousness are now identified with the mess. We still, in the abstract, want the cooperation. We want the government that works, but we see the people at the tiller, and it's kind of like your drunk uncle. I'd also like to say that 77% of people say Joburg is going in the right way. I think the other 23 are deluded.
Yeah. Another little interesting tidbit. The ANC is actually relatively popular amongst voters 18 to 34, getting around 48% of the people surveyed there. The DA is the most popular party amongst voters aged 35 to 44. And the ANC is the most popular party amongst voters aged 45 to 64 and over 65. It's quite interesting that, because I think it one of the things it shows is you've kind of got this middle chunk of people who are young and aspirational, you know, just they've passed youth and they've entered the middle class. And that seems to be where the DA is at its most popular. And then you've got older people who are, you know, more set in their ways and more conservative and things like that, who are more in favor of the ANC. And then you've got young people who, you know, they're still kind of forming their political identities necessarily, and they're maybe more attracted to the ANC because it's kind of a bit more sort of flashy. But I don't know. Chris, any final thoughts on this before we move on?
Just one. I wonder what the ANC Youth League is telling those 18 to 34-year-olds.
Is this all such
a... Yeah, it's not a... So, you know, numbers of 18 to 34 year olds who vote is relatively low, actually, compared to their proportion of the population. But when I say that's a place that they're relatively popular, I'm talking about they get 48% of that group supports, with the EFF outperforming itself in other age brackets, you know, understandably. MK sort of underperforming its national numbers in that age bracket. Okay. Right. So let's talk about what's going on with the GNU. Everyone seems to have retreated back to their corners. The DA and the ANC are now talking amongst themselves about the next steps. The DA's first move has been to go to court. They are challenging various aspects of the way that the VAT was pushed through. I don't know the legal dimensions of that too much, so I'm not going to comment on that. I don't think suffice to say that seems to be their sort of opening move here. But I know that the DA is definitely considering exactly what its next steps are and whether it is going to leave the GNU or wait for the ANC to throw it out. The ANC, for its part, is furious with the DA, seeing this as a betrayal of the government of national unity that it refused to vote for the budget, with ANC members sort of calling for their DA ministers to be sacked immediately. The headline on, I think it was News 24, said Ramaphosa poised for cabinet shakeup as ANC prepares to oust DA ministers. The ANC has said now that it's going to be going to its National Executive Council Committee to decide on the way forward, to think about how to reward the parties who did vote for the budget. In this case, See Action SA and Build One SA, who will probably get either ministerial positions or deputy minister positions. We'll see whether they actually accept them, considering they're both in awkward positions now. But just generally, things sort of kind of seem all up in the air now, and we're not really sure exactly how this is going to play out yet. But Terence, with that in mind, how do you think this is going to play out?
It's a tough one. I do think that there are still advantages for the DA to remain in the GNU, and I think that one of the problems it's going to face is that if it leaves as opposed to being expelled, there's going to be a lot of unhappiness amongst many people in its constituency. You know, the idea that you've opened the door for a tie-up with the EFF, whether that's accurate or not, and also I think with a lot of their donors, there's a lot of pressure on them by their business supporters to do this. I also think that there's an interesting question. Can the president simply throw them out? I don't know the answer to this. You know, there was a coalition agreement. You know, do you simply get to rewrite the terms of that? I don't know the answer. I think that from the ANC's perspective, they're still working under the assumption that that they are a majority party, and that they are holding court with others that they've graciously allowed in. That's why they, I was saying this before the show, the psychological thing for them is, I think, almost rationalizing it internally is to say this is an ANC-led government of national unity. I think that if they push the DA out, I think it will relieve the DA of what has become a conundrum. If you think about the fact that President Ramaphosa has performed some studied insults, things like announcing the signing of the Expropriation Act without informing the minister, the signing of the Bella Act over the head of the education minister. I believe that was intentional. It was meant to signal that I don't respect you. So maybe this whole thing was never precipitous. Maybe it's part of an inevitable learning curve. I do think though that the ANC would in effect be a minority government then, because any of those others would be able to hang it out to dry. And I think there's a phrase, how are you going to like them apples?
I think that's the case. And, I've been arguing for a while now, Chris, that the ANC is not actually going to have such an easy time forming a coalition with the EFF or MK. Not that I don't think the EFF in particular is actually quite keen to be in government. I think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But the consequences of it would be pretty severe. We'll see the Rand take a big hit. We'll see the business confidence dry up. Any chance of economic growth just will evaporate like so much mist in the sunlight. And Ramaphosa's position is the sort of a big cheese in the ANC will be threatened. I don't know. What do you make of that?
The EFF has been quite clear to the ANC about what they want in order to be, allowed into the government. And if the ANC doesn't agree to that, then the EFF won't be allowed in. that was a bit confusing. But yeah, the EFF and MK, the ANC doesn't like MK. We know the ANC doesn't even want to mention Jacob Zuma by name anymore. And I think that the ANC sort of finds that the minority parties are sort of useful in trying to keep them in government. But, I mean, I was reading earlier that the EFF, wait, I completely lost my train of thought.
No, no worries.
You're too young.
he's right. the smaller parties, I think, are very much, the ANC likes them because they give it that veneer of being able to say we're a government of unity. Look at all these voices we've brought into the party. And they're also kind of easy to bribe, because if you're a member of a party that got 4 seats or 2 seats or something, and suddenly you get a deputy ministership, that kind of raises your profile and authority quite a lot above what you ever could have hoped for in normal times. So that's also much more comfortable for the ANC than, you know, the EFF is going to be saying, oh, we want this deputy minister position, we want that one over there, and you must support us in this municipality over here, and we want the mayorship of Etegwini, or you know, you know, the EFF, they always come up with things. I think that's, you know, that's also going to be rub the ANC the wrong way.
If I say this, the Patriotic Alliance is, as these things go, one of the larger players now. When it goes from being, you know, what, I forget the percentage, maybe let's say 2% of the GNU coalition to being 4 or 5%. I must say, good luck to the ANC when Gayton McKenzie decides the sports, arts, and culture might work for one of my underlings, but I'm aiming for the big time now. You know, I'd like XYZ, and I'd also like the mayorship of this town. Or I can just take my votes elsewhere, because that's what I do.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let us go on to our last story for today. And this is the worsening relations with the United States. The ANC has been attempting to, as I say, explain South Africa's economic position to the Americans in an attempt to repair relations. They also have been toning down their usual anti-American rhetoric, kind of being more friendly towards the US. But at the same time, in terms of, you know, the things the US has actually wanted South Africa to change, the ANC has been very stubborn about changing any of them. This is everything from the expropriation bill to some of its hostility towards Israel, various other fronts as well. And this has prompted Congressman Ronnie Jackson, who is a Republican from Texas, to co-sponsor, along with Representative John James from the House of Representatives in Michigan, also a Republican, a bill in the U.S. House which will move to sanction ANC officials over what they say are ties to Iran, China, and Russia. Ronnie Jackson says that in his bill mandates a comprehensive review to identify South African government officials and leaders of the ANC who may be subject to sanctions for their alleged support of American adversaries such as China, Russia, and Iran. Excuse me. The representative said, quote, South Africa has brazenly abandoned its relationship with the United States to align with China, Russia, and Iran and terrorist organizations, a betrayal that demands serious consequences. He said that Congress needs to conduct a thorough review of what is termed, what is referred to the Americans as an ally, but he believes doesn't deserve that title. John James said, this bill builds on and strengthens my bipartisan legislation from the last Congress, which successfully passed the House and supports President Trump's executive order from February 7th addressing the egregious actions of the Republic of South Africa. Now, to be clear, the House of Representatives is full of bills like this that may get passed, and there's like some enthusiasm around them. But ultimately, foreign policy is much more the realm of the U.S. president, so this doesn't necessarily mean that the U.S. Government will, you know, take some bold new hostile action or impose sanctions. But it's definitely a step in that direction, and it shows certainly where at least the Republicans are right now in U.S. politics. Terrence, what do you make of this? There seems as though the ANC is not managing to reel things back on this, on our relations with the US.
It's a bit like downing a bottle of laxative and hoping that you can then, you know, just like, I don't know, breathe it up through your nose. No, you know, once certain things go, you know, go into the hopper, they're there and you can't sort of dial them back. And, you know, the ANC has been broadcasting this "we hate America" message for 2 decades. And, you know, under President Mbeki, there was a kind of love-hate relationship, but there was just a better class of, or better, you know, a caliber of diplomat and engagement going on. And I think that's gone. You know, I think that Durko misread the situation catastrophically. And I've seen this said many times, that the assumption was Kamala Harris would win the election. And they believed that right until the minute it didn't happen. And yeah, you know, during the Lady R debacle, this is sort of forgotten in the maelstrom of incompetence. But would it surprise anyone to know that the ambassador to Washington at the time was Nomeende Mfeketo, a rather controversial former mayor of Cape Town with no diplomatic experience, who'd been shipped off there and was literally off sick for 2 months while that was happening. South Africa's other diplomats apparently were absent from any kind of, you know, knocking on congressional doors. It's like, as one observer said to me, and this is going back about 10, 15 years, his little research outfit had been commissioned to write briefs on countries where South Africa had representatives. He said, what do they do in the embassies? Just issue visas or something? And he was like, literally trying to process this. Why are you asking me, in guy from Cape Town, to write stuff for you about countries where you supposedly have a staff paid and, you know, lots of money to do that? Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, the mess in Joburg is the mess in our office in Washington. Now, so that, you know, South Africa is not the only country in the world to have conflictual relations with America. But one thing I do see, and nor, you know, to have taken this kind of hard line over Israel, Malaysia, for instance, does. But the difference is Malaysia also has a very tight intelligence relationship with America. They're viewed as a maybe a bit wobbly, but still a key ally in that part of the world. They also produce a lot of, you know, valuable high-tech equipment. And so, yes, you know, they can say, well, we do this, but we also do that. And in South Africa's case, it seems to be, yeah, we hate you, but you mustn't listen to us when you say that. That's just for the Iranians to listen to and give us more money. I don't know. That's literally the best I can come up with. Unfortunately, venality, incompetence, and ideology are a lethal trifecta.
They are indeed. Chris, anything to add?
One thing. The SABC reported last night that South Africa's consul general in Los Angeles was kicked out of the country.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, what did Zane Dangor go do in the U.S.? Because he clearly didn't help the situation.
You know, Chris, this is the situation. There's this touching naivety, you know, that if you can just explain it, you know, you can carry on as before. Sometimes, you know, actually, it's your actions that are a problem. You know, like if I recall, for instance, when I, you know, smashed the window, you know, and we had those glass doors when I was growing up, and telling my mom that I was just having a great game with a ball. Funnily enough, you know, she was still really fixated on the fact that there was glass all over the place and that I was playing with a ball where I shouldn't. And I couldn't understand because I'd explained to her that I was playing with the ball. You know, this is the playing with the ball, you know, inside school of diplomacy. If we just tell everyone we're doing it, then somehow it's going to be okay.
You kind of see a similar response actually in the way the ANC has negotiated over the GNU. It's kind of like, actually, you know what? You know, you were rewarded with these ministerial positions, and you're part of the team now. So shut up. We're not giving you anything. Has kind of been the approach, and it's sort of like, kind of shock and horror. Then the DA has betrayed the GNU. Well, I mean, what did you expect? it's just. so bizarre. And I think some of this probably does come from the way the ANC is such a kind of centralized, top-down organization. You know, this sort of this kind of expectation that at the end of the day, you just go along with what you're told to do.
It's also the belief the ANC is also a deeply messianic organization. It believes that it, you know, has this role in history in a way that no one else does. And
yeah, no,
you know, if the president of the United States can't see the world through South Africa's lens, then the problem is not reality. The problem is the president of the United States. Now, maybe the president of the United States is a problem, but that's a separate conversation. That's actually part of reality. But you know, I substitute
right, yours. You have to
put my own.
Yeah, exactly. We need to, you know, we actually need to make policy in response to this. And things are not getting any better. There's also, and I see it's also mentioned in the comments here, but there was this story. It was I saw it on IOL, which is never a great sign because I don't really trust IOL that much. But it's that a guy called Justin Lewis, who belongs to a judicial rights group, CASIA, has written to the incoming American ambassador to South Africa. He's from this guy, Justin Lewis, is from the UK. He has been involved in investigating, I think, something to do with money laundering involving South African judges from KZN. And he claims that there were certain people in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation who actively supported Hamas and may even have known about Hamas's attacks on October 7th. Now, I have no idea if any of this is true. Terence, you had some thoughts on this just before we close the show.
Yeah. Look, I do subscribe to the Carl Sagan school of thought that says extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So until this is verified, I think everyone should retain some skepticism. But if indeed this is true, that South Africa was that there were people in official positions who knew of this and had you know, worked out the scheme that they were then going to, you know, rush to various international fora so that you know, the whole narrative shifts and this becomes kind of a, you know, a conversation about the dreadful things that Israel has done. I think that we are that words fail me, but I don't think we come back from that. I think that is that is our relationship with the United States in particular, but also I think, well, with Israel anyway, but that doesn't seem to be. But you know, I don't think the South African state de facto really recognizes Israel's legitimacy to exist. But with America, and I think with a good number of other countries, and possibly even with some with some countries in the Middle East for whom Iran is a bigger headache than the Zionist entity. I just don't think South Africa recovers from that. You know, at least not while the ANC is in government. I mean, it's game over, and you know, I hope you're happy.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. That's exactly the kind of thing that gets you moved from being, you know, unfriendly country to rogue state.
Yeah, that's breaking the window, going down and burn down the house.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, anyway. I am out of juice for this week, I think. And so we'll call it to a close there. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching. Hope you've enjoyed this show, that you found it interesting. We'll see you tomorrow next, or not tomorrow, sorry. See, I'm out of juice. We'll see you next week on the Daily Friend Show on Monday. Have a great weekend. Cheers, everyone.